Norma McCorvey, the woman who was Jane Roe in the Supreme Court's 1973 Roe v. Wade abortion case, is asking the federal courts to reverse the decision that she once wanted. Last month, the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals agreed to hear her claim that Roe should be reversed. This week, the files of the justice who was the author of the Roe opinion, Harry Blackmun, are being opened to the public. Blackmun served on the High Court for 24 years, retiring in 1994. He left his files, some 500,000 items, with the Library of Congress, ordering that they be made available for public viewing 5 years after his death. In the latest in her series on Justice Blackmun's legacy, NPR legal affairs correspondent Nina Totenberg looks at his most famous opinion.
More than anything else, Justice Harry Blackmun was identified with Roe v. Wade, the abortion decision he authored and for which he bore the brunt of criticism. Bill McDaniel clerked for Blackmun 5 years after Roe.
There was a room upstairs at the court that was filled with nothing but hate mail that he got, and he got it every day.
Tens of thousands of letters. The estimates are 80 or 90,000 in all. As Blackmun put it in his oral history,
I suspect I've been called every possible epithetical name. Hitler, Butcher of Dachau, Pontius Pilate, Herod, Murderer, Madman, and the like.
But there were many letters, too, thanking him, from women who wrote about the terror of their illegal abortions. I would like to thank you, wrote one, for the courage to save my daughter from the experience that I had. Former clerk Bill McDaniel.
And he read it all, some of it he answered, and that weighed on him in those days.
Some 10% of the answered and unanswered mail is preserved in the library, and so are Blackmun's files about the Roe case. While the files of other deceased justices previously shed considerable light on the court's Roe deliberations, Blackmun's files for the first time provide a complete history, including his personal notes and his account of why he, the most junior justice, got the assignment to write the important case. Indeed, it seems that at first the justices did not view the Roe case as all that important. When it arrived on the docket in 1971, there were two vacancies on the court. Chief Justice Warren Burger appointed a three-justice committee, including Blackmun, to screen the cases and reserve the more important ones for later, when the vacancies would be filled and there would be a full nine-man court. The committee decided to go ahead and hear the Roe case with only seven justices, and as Blackmun put it in his oral history,
the obvious implication is that we didn't think it was that important at that time.
Only later did the justices realize, as Blackmun put it, that they had a bull by the tail. Oral argument took place on December 15, 1971, and there were many questions about the role of the doctor, questions that Roe's lawyer Sarah Weddington eagerly answered.
The question is equally serious for the physicians of our state. They are seeking to practice medicine in what they consider the highest method of practice.
At the justices' secret conference after argument, there was a clear majority for invalidating the Texas statute. But there was uncertainty as to what legal rationale should be used. Chief Justice Burger assigned Blackmun to write a memorandum, a sort of draft opinion. Blackmun's draft invalidated the Texas statute as unconstitutionally vague because it provided for abortion only to save the life of the mother. What did that mean, Blackmun wrote? Imminent death or death a year later? Did it include rape or incest? Did it include mental health? No physician could know. Blackmun, however, wasn't sure the vagueness approach was right, and though his memorandum seemed to command a majority, he recommended at conference that the case be re-argued the next term, when the two new Nixon appointees, Lewis Powell and William Rehnquist, would be on the court. As Blackmun describes in his oral history, Justice William O. Douglas objected fiercely.
He was afraid of how the two new justices might vote, and he felt that the chief was not fixed in his position and might change his tentative vote and perhaps influence me by that change. It was an unpleasant and indeed rather an ugly conference.
Afterwards, Douglas wrote a dissent from the decision to re-argue, but withdrew it after Blackmun assured him he was not going to change his mind. Over the summer, Blackmun arranged to spend 2 weeks at the Mayo Clinic Library, researching the abortion question from a medical perspective, including whether the Hippocratic Oath barred the practice. His research, detailed in Roe, led him to conclude that abortion was a permissible procedure that had only been outlawed when it came to be viewed as posing a risk to the mother. In the fall, the case was re-argued, and in conference the vote was 7-2. But this time, the emphasis was on the intrusion on a woman's right to choose. Once again, the chief assigned Blackmun the opinion. In his oral history, Blackmun explains that he, a very junior justice, probably got the assignment by process of elimination. The chief could have assigned it to himself, but thought, quote, it was too controversial. Justice Douglas, next in line, was under threat of impeachment by the House of Representatives, which was investigating him. Justice Brennan was the only Roman Catholic on the court, and while he would have been a good soldier if assigned the case, it would have been a great burden. Thurgood Marshall was the only African-American, and likewise the chief didn't want to burden him. Justice Powell was brand new on the court.
Thus it seemed to me to come down to a choice between Stewart and me. I had done the memo, and therefore I assume I caught the assignment.
Blackmun's first draft circulated in November of 1972. Associate Justice William Rehnquist wrote back immediately, "Although I'm still in significant disagreement, I have to take my hat off to you for marshaling, as well as I think could be done, the arguments on your side." Blackmun's draft was considerably narrower than the eventual decision, and the memos back and forth among the justices show that Justice Lewis Powell was perhaps the key figure in expanding the scope of the ruling. Blackmun's first draft cast the abortion decision as a medical one that was up to the doctor and his patient in the first trimester and could be more regulated by the state thereafter. But a week later, Powell wrote to Blackmun, quote, "I have wondered whether viability would be more defensible in logic and biologically than perhaps any other single time." Within days, Blackmun wrote back that he had no particular commitment to the first trimester cutoff, but had chosen the earlier point because medical writing seemed to focus on the first trimester and because he thought it might be easier for some of the justices than a designated later point. Although Blackmun said he would prefer to leave the cutoff at the first trimester, a week later he wrote to all the justices asking for their views. Justice William Brennan quickly replied that while he had no objection to viability as the cutoff, the concept of viability focused on the fetus rather than the woman. Viability, he noted, would be when the state has an interest in protecting the fetus and preventing abortion, and that before that, logic would dictate that the state's only interest would be in protecting the woman. Blackmun revised his opinion, adopting these and other suggestions. One from Justice Potter Stewart he would later regret. Stewart wanted to add a few paragraphs saying that a fetus is not a person within the meaning of the Constitution, and citing language in the Constitution, suggesting that a person is someone who has been born.
I put it in. I wish I hadn't in retrospect, but as soon as I put it in, Potter joined the opinion immediately. But it has caused a lot of antagonistic comment, those insertions, and I believe that they didn't add a great deal to the opinion.
Another passage Blackmun added was a frank admission of the emotional issue of abortion, or as he put it, quote, one's exposure to the raw edges of human existence, religion, morals, family values, all are likely to color and influence one's thinking about abortion. Our task, wrote Blackmun, is to resolve the issue by constitutional measurement, free of emotion and predilection. It was a passage that Blackmun said violated the advice he got upon his arrival at the court from Justice Hugo Black.
He said, Harry, never agonize in public and opinions as to how difficult they are. And that's precisely what I did in this case. But I thought of all cases that merited revelation of the anguish of decision, Roe against Wade deserved that treatment.
After all the agonizing, Roe was not immediately big news. The death of President Johnson made the court's decision secondary at best when it was first announced. In time, of course, it would become a landmark and a lightning rod, with Blackmun at the eye of the storm. Questioned in the oral history by his one-time law clerk, Yale law professor Harold Coe, Blackmun conceded that Roe was a formative, even liberating experience that made him look at the law and the world differently.
I think it shook me up and... When one comes to this court, he has to grow a little, a lot if he can. Here's an opportunity to think about things that he's never thought about before. if that's a liberating experience, why I went through it.
Roe, of course, was decided by a court of 9 men. That changed in 1981 when President Reagan appointed Sandra Day O'Connor to the court to succeed Justice Stewart, who retired. Blackmun, in his oral history, talked about the change.
There was a period where there were the usual bathroom jokes about the court would have to set up an additional lavatory now on this kind of stuff. We got beyond that stage, and her arrival, I think, was no different than anybody else's arrival. She brought a different point of view. Sandra is able, articulate, positive, very positive in her speech and her voting. Oh, well, this is the way I would vote. I shouldn't mimic my fellow justices, but I've done it always, and I think my clerks have relished my doing so.
Blackmun, in the oral history, put his mimicking skills to work in describing the court's deliberations over a 1986 gay rights case, testing the constitutionality of state laws that made private homosexual conduct a crime. The privacy claim was a direct outgrowth of the court's ruling in Roe. At conference, there were 5 votes to strike down as unconstitutional the Georgia anti-sodomy law, the 5th vote being Justice Lewis Powell. Blackmun, in his notes, put an exclamation point next to Powell's recorded vote. The following Monday, though, Powell sent word that he had changed his mind.
I remember his telling me one time, he said, "Harry, I've never known a homosexual in my life." Well, when he said that, it happened that there were 2 in his chambers.
Powell's biographer and former law clerk John Jeffries would later say of his one-time boss, quote, "Powell had never known a homosexual because he did not want to. In his world of accomplishment and merit, homosexuality did not fit, and Powell, therefore, did not see it." In the end, Blackmun wrote a thundering dissent, predicting that the 1986 ruling in Bowers v. Hardwick would one day be overturned, which it was last year by a 6-3 vote. The court majority cited Roe and its successor cases for the proposition that there is a realm of personal liberty which the government may not enter. Nina Totenberg, NPR News, Washington.